Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome back. My name's Kristen. I'm an alcoholic. And the statement again. The Fellowship of the Spirit Conference is dedicated to carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous as set forth in the book Alcoholics Anonymous to both alcoholics and family members of alcoholic families and Al-Anon family groups. The workshops is one of the ways we hope to share experience, strength, and hope, focusing on the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Our next workshop will be focused on steps 8 and 9. Our panelists will each share for 10 to 15 minutes on steps 8 and 9, and then we'll open the mic again for the remainder of the time. So step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And Rob is going to start us off. He's asked me to read a few paragraphs. On page 77, it says, "Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results." And Rob's going to start us off. It's up to you.
All right. One of the stand-up meetings, huh? The stand-up and share, my favorite. Man, I'd like to thank Kristen for asking me to come talk. First off, and thank the members of my home group, Matt, for hanging out with me all morning, and these two guys for riding up here with me, and Aaron, as we were pulling in, to asking us to go to lunch. Man, it's great to have a bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous we hang out with and do things together, because, whenever I get asked to talk, I always think, I wish they'd tell me, like, the day before, because then I get, like, 2 months or 3 months of thinking about, oh yeah, it's 2 weeks till I have to give that talk. Oh yeah, it's this one, and I still got that thing going on in my head where it's just always there. I don't know that I'll ever get over that. But what's been important to me is just to show up when I've been asked to talk and do things in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've been given a whole new life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be even standing here today is nothing short of a miracle. And so, it's a tough thing to do sometimes, but it's really, you know, this deal is really worth doing. And I was asked to talk about steps 8 and 9, and I've got some funny experiences on those steps. And MG kind of was there through a lot of those amends, and man, some crazy stuff. I thought I'd just done the fifth step, and I went home, and it says in here that, where do you get your eighth step? And it says right in here, you made the list when you took inventory, right? Well, I wasn't too, up to speed on that whole deal. And I went home, and, my sponsor said, you go home, you put the book on the shelf, you sit down, you make sure you've done everything thorough. I did all that stuff. And I thought, in addition to this, I'm going to burn my list. I'm going to go outside and torch my inventory. And so I did that, and the next meeting with my sponsor, he's like, "Where's your list?" And I'm like, "Well, I torched it, you know." And so I had to write out my eighth step, you know, write out all the people that I owed amends to, and which wasn't such a bad thing because there was a lot of things I did that weren't on my inventory, so it was kind of good to take another inventory. But it says in here, alcoholics, we owe a lot of money. We tear through people's lives. We do a lot of things. And I stole from a lot of people and from stores and places like that. And I made a lot of those amends. And I got a lot out of it. But it wasn't really, those weren't the hard amends to make. It was really easy for me. And it was like, there was just a small flame. And I went into the, I remember the first one, I had this new car and the air conditioner didn't work, right? And I'm driving around, it's a black car, it's in the summer, and I went to this place called Riverton Music, and I remembered that I stole weird things that alcoholics do. I stole a Metallica Ride the Lightning book to teach you how to play guitar, right? But I didn't even have a guitar, but I thought it was cool. I stole the book, you know, because it was cool. And I just remember that, and I drove by that place all the time, and I said, "Hey, I stole from that place, you know?" And so I went in there and just said, "There's this guy, I remember it just like it was yesterday," and it was over 10 years ago, and this guy's up on a ladder, and said, "Hey, can I talk with you for a minute?" And I told him that I stole the book and that I'd like to pay him for it, and I wouldn't accept any other answer, and I gave him the $20 or whatever it was, and he was just like, "Man, this is so... I can't believe you're doing this. This is so big of you," and blah, blah, after all these years, because it had been like 10 years since I stole it, you know. Man, I left that place feeling like $1 million. That really went well, you know. And I went outside, and for some reason, I just kicked on my air conditioner on my car, and a couple leaves, like, shot out of the vent, and I swear, cool air was coming out of my car, and I thought, these amends things really work. You know, my air conditioner didn't work. Now it's working, you know. And those men's where I just owed money were really easy for me at that point. I stole a lot, but it wasn't a lot of high dollar stuff. So I remember walking through the mall with, you know, $200-$300 in my pocket. And I'm like, yep, I stole from that store, went in, paid them. Stole from that store, went in, paid those guys, you know, and got all that stuff handled. But some of the harder amends were for me to make were my last couple of years drinking and using. I had some people that let me stay in their house, and I lived with them for a while, and, you know, friends' parents' houses and stuff like that. And I really tore through some of their lives and was a bad influence on their kids and wasn't a very good person. Those were the hard amends to make. To go into these people's home and say, "Look, you guys opened up your house to me. You let me live here. I did such and such and such. I don't want to live this way anymore. Please, if there's anything I can do to make this up to you, is there anything I can do to make it right?" And most of them, they all give you the same answer. You know, just keep doing what you're doing. Stay sober. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's not till even recently, years and years down the road, after being sober for a while and trying to enlarge my spiritual life, where it's like these people said, "Yeah, just stay sober, just do this." But I start having thoughts every now and again, well, maybe I can do something, a little something extra for those people someday. You know what I mean? Maybe I can ask, check in with them, see if they're okay. And that's just stuff that's from, you know, doing this deal over and over that I start to have thoughts like that. I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic. I don't have thoughts like, maybe I should do something else for this person. Maybe there's something, you know. That's just not a normal thing. It's almost like when those thoughts roll through my head, I'm like, "Where's that coming from?" You know. Really good stuff. I was thinking about a couple of amends stories. Kristen said she liked some of my amends stories, and one of the really hard ones. And it's funny because when I went through the list, not everything comes out. You know, you don't remember all the different amends that you've had to make to people. And I think I was probably, MG will remember, maybe 6 or 7 years sober or something like that. And I ran into this guy, I think it was at the community college or something. And when I saw him, it was like everything, it just, you know, it just dawned on me, man, I remember what I did to that guy. We went to drop him off. His garage was open. he had a chainsaw inside there, and I thought, man, I could steal that chainsaw, hawk it, and get some money for drugs, you know. And I did. He ran in the house. I waited till he was in this house. Great friend that I was, took the chainsaw out of his garage, went and sold it for a couple $100, you know. And so I ran into this kid 5 or 6 years sober, and I said, man, I admitted my fault to him, and I said, I've got to do something to make this right with your dad. Can you give me his address? So I got his dad's address, called him up. His dad's like, I just said, I need to talk to you. He said, come on over. I remember sitting in this guy's living room, sitting up there with him. And I just said, you know, man, I don't know. It was probably like 7 years ago or something. I'd stolen your chainsaw and I hawked it, and I'm here to just pay you. I had the $200 in my pocket. I need to pay you. And the guy was like, his tears started to well up in his eyes, and he was just sat there for a minute, and then he's like, man, all these years I thought my son had stolen that chainsaw and hawked it for drugs, and it was me. So I paid him and made that amends. But what's crazy about this deal is, you know, you at least I did. I went through this stuff thinking, you know, I'm not affecting that many other people or this. It's just that. And you don't realize that how many, you know, it's kind of like a chain reaction. You're going through and doing this stuff, but or causing that wreckage. But the good thing is, when you go back and make the amends, it's the same type of deal. It's a chain reaction. You make the amends and it may, you know what I mean? It could clear up other things. And I would say, hands down, this was the step that I felt it working immediately, right out of the chute. You know, I get take some guys through the steps, and they get to the step and kind of stall out for a little bit. And it's just like, man, if they just go make those first couple amends, it's like you make those first couple amends and you can just feel the weight come off your shoulders. And what a good deal. I haven't had to have any real serious amends in sobriety, thank God. I've been over to I've taught, you know, I don't want to talk about further steps, but just in, you know, step 10, that when something happens, that you take care of it right away. And there's been deals in sobriety where if I didn't take care of that thing right away, then I would have had to go back and make a serious amends for it. But I was reading in here, and it's right before the part. I didn't want to make her read the whole chapter, but I was reading through this stuff, and I'm like, where do you start and stop in this chapter? Because there's just so much good stuff in here. And there was one little sentence in here right before the part where it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. But right before that, it says, it's talking about, you don't want to be too spiritual going with these people right out of the chute. But it says here, maybe taken out of context, but it says, at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order. And I thought, man, that really sums up those two steps for me. You know, when I was out there making those amends, I was out there just trying to put my life back in order. I'd screwed everything up so bad for so many years that just being out there doing that stuff, and then the next sentence really makes sense, where it says, you know, we fit ourselves to be of maximums, you know, we our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. If my life's not in order, I'm not going to be able to have that. I'm not going to be able to, you know, be of maximum service to other people. And that's the whole deal that, man, this Alcoholics Anonymous thing has given me. It's given me a new way of life to where I can go out there and I can do stuff like this. I can walk through fear. Public speaking is no fun thing to do. I don't think it even is. It, you know, almost 14 years sober. Not for me anyways, you know. But man, if I don't do this stuff, if I'm not up here doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I don't think I have a very good chance of staying sober and living a very good life. The bright side of the spectrum is, you know, if you do the stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have to do it perfect, but if you just keep putting one foot in front of the other and try and do the next right thing, that you can have a great life sober. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, I have always been able to hear Rob when he talks about these two steps, and coming in after him, it gave me a lot of hope. But the other thing, too, is because I forget that what I do to people, you know. So it's a good reminder. So next we have Debbie.
Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie Davis, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Debbie.
And it's nice to be here, and thank you for asking me to be on share on 8 and 9. These are really some, this is the next time that I take, or maybe even the first time I start taking responsibility for me and my actions. I've, you know, come upon that inventory, I've written that, and I've admitted it to someone else, but I really begin to now take responsibility for the harms I've caused people. And in my years of working with others, many times we've gone through that inventory process and we've talked about 6 and 7 and time will go by and all of a sudden there's, I got to do another inventory. And my question is, well, but where are we with 8 and 9, you know? And it's so frightening to go out there and actually do that direct face-to-face amends where possible, wherever possible. And this is the thing that gave me the great freedom. So 8, making that list, was what the first focus I had to make. I was trying to not work into 9 until I had that list, because again, that fear, embarrassment, the shame. So in making that list and identifying what are the harms that I did, having a clarity, because I have a tendency, either I'll minimize it or I'll take responsibility for the recent earthquake also, you know? And I have to find what was the harm I caused and not underplay it or overplay it. But and I didn't really have that long of a list. My drinking years were 6 years, so my list wasn't that long enough, not as long as others, just right for me. And I had some financial amends to make, and those were taken care of. And my parents, mother and father, were, of course, at the top of that list. And I made amends to them very early on, maybe not very prepared, but I, as young as I was, I just went in and made those amends. But years later, I would come back to them and say, I know that I made amends to you when I first got sober, but, you know, is there anything else that I've done over the years, even drinking or sober, that have been harmful that you want to talk to me about or anything? Because I just felt like it was so long ago when I'd made those amends. And both of them said, no. And so with that point, I can't say, well, I really think there is. You know, no, you just take it for what they say. No. And you move on. But I just really felt that, okay, then that is clear. But what I learned from this is it really, there's two types of amends that need to complement each other, and that was the direct amends need to be followed by living amends. And too many times I've worked with gals that think living amends are fine enough. To me, they're not. Because you never gave that other person the opportunity to participate in the amends where that was possible. So it's been important for me as I've done those direct amends is to you know, carve out that time with them, make that appointment and ask if I can have 30 minutes of their time or something, and to meet them. And to just only do that business at hand, not incorporate it with lunch and dinner and, you know, movies or anything like that. Just have a focus, a primary purpose for this meeting time. And then I always liked having a place to go, like a meeting in an hour or two. So there was always an out for me. And then to identify the harm I had done. And I've learned from this to follow that with, and any other harms I've done I'm not aware of that have been hurtful and harmful to you. And is there anything you would like to say? Because for me it's a one-time opportunity. You don't get part two later on down the line. So, you know, this is your opportunity. And it gives, I think it allows a healing on their part. The important thing I had to remember was no defending what they said or correcting what they said, because whatever their thoughts and feelings were real to them, just like mine were to me. And then what can I do to make that right? Like I've told them, like I said, I didn't have a lot of financial amends. The few I had that I made payments on, I treated them like they were the top priority above all other financial responsibilities, because whether or not they really know I'm in AA or just someone trying to make it right, I am an anonymous example of Alcoholics Anonymous. That I am building integrity and credibility, that if I say it'll be there by the 1st, it better be mailed by the 25th. And it better be the right amount. It can't be, well, I was a little short this month. Because I am representing AA in an anonymous type of fashion. That's my attitude on it, is that I have to pretend everyone is watching in how I behave, even though no one might be watching. If I have that attitude, I will likely, you know, stand up to the task. Everybody has one that they just don't want to make. I mean, I've never listened to an inventory that didn't have one at the top of the list. It was just, I don't want to do that one. And mine was my stepmother. And I had come into AA or introduced to AA through a treatment program, and there I would, they had told me to, this is a requirement, so there was about as much sincerity as a rock, okay, in making this amend. I was to call her mom, which, please, just shoot me, you know, kind of a feeling. I just know this is not mom. This is the Wicked Witch of the West. And in my belief and feeling, and I made this quick, I'm sorry for all I did. I mean, so there was really, it was a joke. You can't even call it an amend. It was this perfunctory call that was just ridiculous. And so the years go by, and I have kind of this complacent sort of period of time in my sobriety. And when I kind of came crashing back into AA, not drunk, but dry as you can get and miserable, I was about 6 years and 9 months sober. And I really focused and took those steps again as if I had never taken them before. And really, I had done the best to my ability before that. So now at this point, I got a little more knowledge, a little more experience. And I got to those amends again, and I still had that. And I knew from the original list was to this stepmother. So I went to a conference in November, like, of that year. And the speaker had just come back, was on his way back from visiting his father in Florida. He was 30 years sober and had just made these amends. So now if you've just done something, well, then you're all on fire for it and everybody else has to do it, right? So he comes back and he lays this message out. And really, it was the primary thing I heard him say that night. And he said, if you've got amends to make and you haven't done it, do them while they're still alive so you don't say you wish you would have. So that kind of was a pretty loud 2x4. Going into that meeting, if you would have said to me, say, Deb, when are you going to make amends to her? I know it's soon. It's going, you know, I know it's on the list. I'm going to get to that. The minute he said that, if you'd asked me the same question, I said, it's now. Now is the time. I knew from that statement that I had 90% freedom, and this was the key to the 10, the remaining 10. I knew that. Now, again, I had a sponsor. It was kind of a loose sort of sponsorship. I lived in Atlanta. She lived in North Dakota. The closest thing I had was a P.O. box. She's got no phone number listed. I write a letter. And again, today I might have done some different actions, but at the time I wrote this letter of amends. And I am listed full name in the phone book, still am. I'm not anonymous in that regard. People can find me. And about a month later in January, early January, I get a phone call, and it's her voice on the other end of the line. And she began to talk, and I knew that this step had worked. because my gut, when I heard her voice, didn't go and tighten up. I knew I was finally free because I had gone in of them all the amends I ever needed to make. This one had to go in with complete, unequivocal, unconditional forgiveness on my part. It had to. I had been in such bondage, self-imposed bondage of how I felt around this woman. And I was really free because I had gone in with that spirit of forgiveness. And I have found that is a requirement for me. It talks about it in Step 8 in our 12 and 12 about the forgiveness. And that is a real bugaboo for me. It really is. Okay, so this is the key point where I learned, because you see, I felt I had a review of our relationship. Very clear. That's my self-righteousness, that what I remember is how it happened. The things I identified as my harms weren't even on a blip of the radar. But she was really anxious to tell me of all the other things I did not remember that I said and did that were harmful to her. And that's when I honest to God, did not omit them. I had zero memory of those things. And that's why that was the key piece I learned, that I have to make that open, that channel open to them, to let their harms be heard and the healing for them begin as well. Okay, so that is, I'm 7 years sober. This is early January. Now we go to eight years, I'm 15 years sober. And I am in North Dakota, and I'm talking at a convention there, and I had heard that she was dying from colon cancer and probably wouldn't make it till Thanksgiving. I didn't feel the need or the drama or the theatrics to rush and go see her or anything. There'd been no real contact at all. I just felt the people who really love her need to be there. Our peace had been set, and she didn't need me to try to save the day or make things right or anything. Our pieces had been done. So she dies, and her half-brother calls me and says, yeah, did you know that she was in? She was 10 years sober? Where'd you go to meetings? Where was Friday? Where'd you have response? And he says, well, I don't really know a lot of that because she was anonymous to the family till she was 5 years. So I really don't know a lot about that. And so I start backtracking and think, wait a minute now. When she called me, that would have made her 8 years. Huh. I wonder why I didn't get an amends back. That's an interesting one. So I'm calculating and thinking about that. And then I realized, you know, in that next thought, it never was ever going to be about her making amends to me. It was never going to be about that. That was never going to be required, because I went into the deal when I made my amends with complete forgiveness. I was always free from that time on. It was never about her making amends, cleaning up whatever she thought did or didn't do. Never was. So the freedom that we get, the freedom I get, so much comes from the direct amends and then the living amends. My father just died about a month and a half ago, very suddenly. And once again, I was on a trip, but as soon as I heard, I finished the commitments that I had on that trip, and then I went to North Dakota so I could then continue on another week to be of service to his wife. And what I felt so thankful for was that we'd been current for decades. My living amends had been many years of a good daughter. I had made arrangements, at 14 years sober, I began what I felt was really a better daughter kind of relationship, where every month I would call him on the first Sunday of the month, because that was a commitment I could make and begin to open that door of a relationship. And so for over 20 years, I never missed that Sunday. And we always closed that conversation with I love yous. And we would see each other over the years. And I'm not saying that it was a relationship that was, you know, like white on rice or close, close, close. It wasn't that, but it was a very comfortable, giving, loving relationship for us. And what I was so thankful for is that you taught me how to be a good daughter by being a good daughter, by the actions I took. That for 35 years, he didn't have to worry about me anymore. He never got a call from a jail again or from an employer or from anybody concerning my behavior. You know, this was what I was so grateful for. You showed me how to do the living amends. So for me, it's both are required because it's for me and it's for them. So thank you for letting me share my experience on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm sitting back there in shock. If I'd been standing, I would have passed out with that story about your stepmom. I'm glad that's your experience and not mine, because, wow, that sounds difficult. So the next panelist will be our Al-Anon Trinity. Really glad she came. Just a few days ago, we talked, and she rearranged her schedule this weekend so she could come up and share with us. So thank you for doing that. She asked me to read the Ninth Step Promises. Start on the bottom of page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. This is Trinity.
Sorry, I should have stood up first. That was a little awkward. Hi, I'm Trinity.
Hi, Trinity.
I'm grateful to talk today, and when I got the call and was asked to talk on 8 and 9, I almost laughed out loud and said, really, God? I suck at that. So I was grateful I only had a few days, like you said. Like, if I had to think about this for months, I would have, who knows what. So over the few days, I started planning out this big old long, like, okay, this is what I'm going to say, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And last night, I got a few minutes to sit down and write it out, and I started writing it out, like, all this that I had planned. And my higher power gently told me, sorry, sweetie, that's not what you're going to say. And I was like, oh, crap. Okay, so a little of my history is I was raised by my mom and my stepdad. My stepdad came into my life when I was just a few months old, and he was a Marine, and he was an adult child of an alcoholic, and so our life was very interesting. He was all about respect and demanding respect, and I was all about don't tell me what to do. And so we had a lot of, you know, interesting fights, and our relationships got along. We got along really well when one of us decided it was okay to let the other be in control. But if we differed on any situation, then the whole world better look out, because it was going to be like we were going at blows. And so when I was a teenager, you know, I'm obviously don't want to hear anything he has to say. I start hanging out with the guys that I knew would really piss him off, and drinking just to prove that I could, and all that kind of crap. And when I turned 18, like 2 days later, I moved out. I'm like, I'm done with your house and your rules. I'm getting my house and my rules. And that house was me and the first alcoholic I lived with. And he was a lot like my dad. We fought a lot of the control back and forth. And I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm not playing this game anymore. I left again and started doing my own thing again. And I met this man that came in my life, and he was the most sweet, gentle, amazing guy that just listened, and he let me control everything. And that was really great. I got to pay the bills. I got to make dinner. I got to, you know, I took care of the kids. Like, I did it all. I did everything. And then I started realizing I was resenting him because where the hell was he? And I was like, wait, do I really want all this control? And after 8 years of like, I want to control you. No, I don't. Where are you? Come back. Go back. Blah, 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 blah. All that crap. We end up right where we need to be in God's hands. And I was told by one of the most amazing women I've met in the program, hey, sweetie, while he's taking some time to look at him, maybe you should look at yourself. And I thought for a minute and I thought, yeah, you might have something. So she introduced me to Al-Anon. And I went, and my first meeting, I sneak into the corner and I sit down, and there's like probably about pretty close to this amount of people are like, oh my gosh, this is a really big program. And then they start talking, and I turn to the guy next to me. I'm like, I think I might be in the wrong meeting. He's like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, Al-Anon. And he's like, yeah, you are. Yours is upstairs. And I go upstairs, and there's like three people. And I'm like, okay, cool. I can do this. I'm not afraid anymore. So I sit there and I tell my whole big long sob story and cry and, you know, how right I am and how wrong the world is. And they listened and they gave me love and support and they gave me suggestions, but nobody corrected me. Nobody was like, no, you're wrong. Like, I don't know. I still to this day don't know how that happened because I think my higher power was definitely in charge there because if somebody were to tell me straight out black and white what I was doing wrong, I would have flipped them off and walked away. But because they gently were like, maybe you should get a sponsor and maybe you should start working the steps. I was like, okay, and I got a sponsor and I didn't like her. So I heard her and I got another one and didn't like her either. And so this time I asked God, I said, okay, I'm like learning like the first three steps in this process of going through sponsors. Okay, God, so now I know you're there. Where do you want me? And I go to a meeting and I find this woman who just is amazing. And I go up to her after and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for a sponsor. Would you be willing to take me on? And she says, yeah, I work my program out of the big book. So you're going to want to go get a big book. I was like, oh, no, I'm an Al-Anon. I work out of the Paths to Recovery book. She's like, oh, that's great. I work my program out of the big book, so get a big book and meet me in a week. And so I walk away like, okay, and like show up at the meeting with 100 reasons why I don't have a big book, right? Well, she had one for me. And she sat down and we opened it up and we started reading. And I was like, was really amazed at how my life was in those words. And she challenged me to find what was killing me then, right then. You know, most alcoholics come into AA because they feel that alcohol is killing them. So what was my alcohol? What was killing me at this point? And surprise, it was control. And so I start working the steps on this, and I get through, like, really crazy, you know, nail-biting, like, blood, sweat, and tears, her dragging me, other people from the program, like, just get through it. And I get through my fourth step, and I'm in the middle of my fifth step, and I get a phone call as I get home one night. My dad passed away. He'd passed away unexpectedly in the middle of the night. And I, at first, was like, that's kind of interesting. There's an amends I can just mark off my list. And then I went back and we're like doing the rest and I got those ninth step promises. And I was like, okay, I have to be real about this. If I want those promises, then I have to do this right. So I decided, okay, I'm going to make amends to my dad. He'll be first because he's, you know, first on my list of everything. And so I start trying. I go to where he's, you know, where his body lays to rest. And he did that. I didn't get any peace from that. I try like all the different things that it talks about in there. And I was really frustrated, and I go to meetings, and I talk to my sponsor, and I'm, like, obsessing over this. Like, I need to make amends to my dad, because once I do that, I'm going to feel free, and I'm going to get all these ninth step promises. And she said, Trin, can I just suggest that maybe your first amend lays with your husband? And I was like, no, he's the alcoholic. I don't, like, he has the amends there, right? And she's just like, And then we went back through that list of, oh, wait, that's right. That's why the big book applies to me. Okay, I owe him an amends. So I sit down with him one night, and I'm already in praying, and she like totally tweaked my amends and was like, you are not blaming, this is what we're doing, da 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 da. Okay, I'm good, I'm not gonna blame him. And I sat down and this peace came over me that I don't normally feel. I'm a very hyperactive, crazy person. And this peace came over me and I looked him in the face and I was just like, I apologize. I was wrong for blah, 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 blah. And at some point in there, he brought to my attention, this is one of the first times I've ever heard you say in over 10 years that you were wrong. And I was like, this is the first time in over 10 years that I, well, more than 10 years in most of my life where I actually felt wrong. And that was big to me because I realized that so often in my life, it was always a battle over who was right and who was wrong. My dad was always wrong and I was always right. My, you know, previous alcoholics were always wrong and I was always right. And my husband at the time, same thing. So all of a sudden I have to start looking, and I was at a meeting and I heard someone say, similar to what I've heard today, step 9 is about taking, being willing to take responsibility for your own actions. And I thought about that and I'm like, responsibility for my own actions. That's interesting because I had taken responsibility for my dad's actions my whole life. I didn't want the world to perceive him in a certain way, so I would take responsibility for that. I took responsibility for all the other alcoholics and all the other, everybody around me. I took all that on. The only person I wasn't taking responsibility for was myself. And I realized that the obsessing that I was doing over making the amends to my dad, I was hiding. I was hiding behind his behavior, and I've always done that. I've always hidden behind somebody else's behavior because his behavior was so much more out there and in your face than mine that I could hide behind it and I could be right and he could be wrong. And that was so much of my life. And I realized that in the big book it says, you know, this was but a symptom. My dad was my symptom. And now, like, he's gone. I don't have my symptom, like, waving around for me to hide behind anymore. I have to get down to my causes and conditions. I have to see what is really me in this life. And so I started making other amends and talking more. Like, when things come up, and I'll say, usually not in the same day, I usually have to, you know, vent for a little while before I can go back and say, hey, I was wrong. I shouldn't have responded in this way. And I noticed people starting to say back to me, I was wrong too. I shouldn't have said this. This is where I was coming from, and we got heated, and this is what's going on, and we work it out. And I was like, wait, we were both wrong. It's not one person's right, one person's wrong. And my higher power brought this, like, this serenity into my heart of, if I can admit that I'm wrong and I'm not perfect, then I can give other people room to make mistakes. And it's so much less work to not have to be perfect, to not have to be the one that's holding it all together and, right, you know, smile and blah, blah, blah. But as I, like, just going through this process and all this, I'm like looking around at my life and saying, it's not black and white. That's how, I mean, most of the people in Al-Anon that I know, we live in the black or the white. And when the minute we get in that gray water, we start to panic. Like, gray is not okay. We have to be extreme one way or the other. We have to be really good or really bad. And that's how my life is. Like, I either have, like, I have this really big problem. I have to go make all this amends, blah, 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 blah. Or, hey, I'm completely done with amends. I'm good. I don't have to do it anymore because there's no gray. And this week I've thought of all the living amends that I do and all the different things and where this all plays into my life. And I've just seen the promises. I've seen them come through to me, and I've seen the people around me, like, experience them too. And it's really cool. And as I continued on and doing more amends and doing more inventories and working blah blah blah, all the stuff, I was at a meeting one day not expecting it. We were reading out of the, I can't remember what we were reading, and somebody shared an experience of their dad passing away before they were able to make amends. And in this meeting they talked about proxy and making proxy amends, and I thought, oh, that's funny. I don't think that would work for me. I don't even want to think about that again. And later in the day, a friend came to me and she's like, I've been really thinking, if you're willing, I would like to be your proxy. And I was like, no, you don't come to me. I'm supposed to find you and come to you and whatever, you know, I'm all about, this is the way it's supposed to be. And we sat down together. We sat down together and started talking, and I was not about to make amends to this woman for the crap that me and my dad had, stuff I wasn't going to share to the world. And I didn't know her that well, and I'm not going to make that amends to her. And as we started talking, she just randomly was like, hey, do you mind if I hold your hands while we talk for a second? And I'm like, okay. And it was really interesting how the words just came out of me. Everything just came out, and oddly enough, the response I got was, if you want to feel bad on your own time, but stop hiding behind me. I am no longer your symptom, and I have forgiven you. Your turn to forgive. You have to forgive yourself, and you've got to stop hiding. And so I try, and every day I try, and my biological father came into my life, and I thought, at first I was like, hell no, you are not coming. I am just getting sane. I'm not bringing more crazy in. So life turns, and next thing I know, he's coming to my house, and he wants to come over for Christmas, and he wants to do this, and he's coming for my son's birthday, and my kids are calling him Grandpa, and it's hard because the man that I wanted them to call Grandpa is dead. And I'm like, who is this man? I don't even know you, and my kids are calling you Grandpa. And the thought comes, my living amends. So now I get to practice being the daughter, you know, the good daughter or whatever, however you want to put it, the daughter that I wasn't. And it's painful and it's shitty that it has to be with somebody else. But in the same way, it's cool, because who knows what he has to offer. But I'm grateful for the program. I'm really grateful for the big book. And thanks for letting me share.
Okay, we have about 12 minutes for anybody to share your experience.
My name's Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Amy.
I really appreciate what has been shared so far about, especially about steps 8 and 9. Was just reflecting on, you know, hearing the words said about hiding behind a problem, and then when I work these steps, the problem goes away, and I'm left with me and my behavior and my thoughts. I grew up in a home that, for the most part, I had a very, very tumultuous relationship with my mother. Things got really ugly, and they were ugly for a long time, and I used that, and I learned when I came into this program and got sober and began to work my steps, I've learned that I have used her to be a crutch for me to medicate, to drink, to not be a part of my life, and I got to make amends to my mom, who I, you know, I came into these rooms with the biggest hole in my heart, and I thought that that would never, never go away. I thought that that would just be part of my life for the rest of my life, and I didn't know how I would ever feel better, you know, and it's interesting. I can't really say how, but I know that, you know, they say keep coming back. I kept coming back. I got a sponsor. I'm working the steps. You know, I try to be a part of as much as possible. And in doing so, I don't know how it works. And connecting with a higher power, you know, that power that's greater than myself has definitely, my heart is full today, and I'm very blessed today. And last year, I was able to make amends to my mother, and I was able to take my part in that. And my part in that was that I've hurt that woman for a long time by using her to be my reason. And I got to make amends to her, and I didn't, you know, she didn't defend herself, and she surprisingly didn't even come back with, you know, wanting to talk more about what else I had done wrong. It was just a really, really cool experience, and today my relationship with my mother is so deep and so full and so loving, and I don't know how that happened other than I was willing to do the work in this program and I was willing to connect with a power greater than me. So I just feel very, very blessed to be able to listen to your stories because I learn how to walk through my life by watching you walk through yours. And thank God that there is a solution today. And so I appreciate everybody being here. You know, thanks for showing up for me today. And I will take another 24.
Hi, guys. My name is Megan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Megan.
And I just couldn't sit there and not stand up about the eighth and ninth step because they've saved my life. I haven't been up to Park City or anywhere in this area for about 3 years, and my wreckage is here. And I did a lot of first things up here that are part of who I am today. And the drive up the canyon, I don't think I've ever felt more messed up than when I drove up the canyon. I've been super drunk for years driving up this canyon. But I felt really messed up driving up. And every single street light and lamp and restaurant and bathroom stall, you know, reminds me of the places I got loaded. And last night, I was out of it. My sponsor's like, "What is your problem?" And I'm like, "I don't know. You know, I'm tripping out a little bit. But, you know, I'm making an amends to myself right now. And I'm being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And, you know, I'm taking my life on today. And I'm forgiving myself today for things that I chose to do because I didn't love myself and because I needed you to love me so much and I needed you to accept me and I needed it, you know, that control. And I just made an amends. I was late before I got here. I thought we had more time. And 3 years ago, I stole this little star turquoise necklace. I love stars and I love turquoise. And I remember talking to the owner of the store 3 years ago, and I was so upset when I went in there. And she was just a sweetheart, and she just talked to me and was just all nice. And when she wasn't looking, I stole this little turquoise star. And I got, you know, immediately getting up here, I, you know, was thinking about it. And we went on the break. We were eating lunch, and I'm like, I have an amends I need to make here. And it's not the $25, you know. It was the principle of I took it because I felt like, you know, things were taken from me. I stole because you stole from me. And I'm going to prove to you how much you hurt me. And I'm going to show you how much you stole from me. And I walked into the store and I said, "My name's Megan. I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "Are you the owner of the store?" And she said, "I'm not." And I said, "I need to make an amends as part of my ninth step. I stole this little charm and I need to pay for it." And she said, "I'm not the owner, but she's up the street." And so I'm like, "Oh my gosh," like, "okay." So I'm like, "Okay, I'll go." So, you know, just running up the street and getting the butterflies of that rush of, you know, the powerlessness of when I made those decisions and that gut feeling of like, you are the scum of the freaking earth and you deserve to feel this shitty. And the power that happens walking in that door and not caring who was looking at me and the voice that I owned and said, you know, "I'm an alcoholic and I stole this and I need to make it right." You know, that's the recovery I needed to come up here and take home with me. You know, and I can leave this place and know that, you know, I made a beginning. I made a beginning and it'll be years before I can let go of the pain of what I've done up here. But, you know, that's something I could have never done before. That's something I couldn't have done without reading that book and without being willing to put those names on that list. And I'm one of them. You know, I didn't want to put myself on my fourth step. I didn't want to put myself on my fifth step, you know, and I do today, you know, because I'm a name that I want to live. So with that, I'll take another 24. Thanks.
Okay, just want to thank the panel speakers again. And if anybody has questions about steps 8 and 9, doesn't know how to do them, is curious about why we do them or whatever, again, there's lots of people to ask, including these guys up here. We'll be back at 3:15 for the next panel. By Group Conscious, the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that this week, that this whole conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. And... Okay.